session number 9437, reel 2.
Elizabeth Hughes, tape 2. Did you have to have an interview by the FAU authorities in order to get into Mirror?
Well, I'd had an interview by the FAU. I think the FAU vouched for me, and I imagine they organised the teams and submitted them to whatever the authority was that organised Mirror, which must have been under the Army. There were groups from the Red Cross and I think St John's, Save the Children Fund. There were some Fannies on the boat, but I don't think they were in Mirror. And there was a Jewish group within Mirror. And I can't remember any other, but there may have been some other voluntary organisations as well. I can remember I don't think we met at all until just before we embarked to get on the train, to get on the boat, which I think was Liverpool, but I'm not quite sure, because I certainly hadn't been there before.
Did you have any specific training before you left?
No, not before we left. When we got to Egypt, the trip out was all in convoy, which was very interesting, seeing the convoy, the boats, and watching which ones changed. Of course, we didn't really know anything about them. Some people pretended to be very knowledgeable. And, of course, it was blackout on the boat and everything.
What sort of boat did you go on?
Oh, it was some sort of a liner. I think it was a P&O liner. Oh, I can remember being absolutely fascinated with the food, because there was white bread and lots of butter. Oh, the food was marvellous, real sort of liner food, you know.
And how about the accommodation?
Let's think now. Do you know, I find it awfully difficult to remember. I think we must have been in a cabin for about 10 or 12 women, and the men, I'm getting it mixed up with when we went to India. But I think it must have been, I think we had a big cabin. And the men were also in other cabins lower down, some of them not so comfortable as far as I remember. And I think I must have eaten in the sort of first class dining room, and I think the men in our group must have eaten somewhere else. It's funny, all I remember is this white bread and cream crackers on the table at supper time, dinner in the evening.
Because this, would have been quite late in the war, wouldn't it?
Oh, yes. Yes, but the war hadn't finished by a long shot. This was February 44.
Mm. You're mentioning these different groups, you know, that Mary was made up of. How did you all get on?
Do you know, it's strange. I don't remember there being much friction, but my sister was in Egypt when I got there. And, was she there then? Anyway, she says she remembers me saying there was a lot of friction between them, but I don't remember it with hindsight. So I must have reported it then. But, you know, I don't remember it much, so I don't think it can have been anything very terrible. In fact, I think we must have got on fairly well.
Were there any obvious dangers, you know, in your journey to Egypt?
Not very obvious. Oh, yes, we had a lifeboat drill and that sort of thing. And I don't know whether anyone dropped out of the convoy. I don't remember there being any bombing or anything like that. And there weren't. I don't remember being got up for an emergency either. And so that was fairly all right. Of course, we went quite a long way out into the Atlantic, I think. I don't remember seeing the Spanish coast. Of course, we came through Gibraltar. But I think that must have been at night. I don't remember seeing the rock.
What was your first impression of the Middle East? Can you remember?
Yes. All the Arabs fighting to get to you to try and make you buy something. And the crowds.
Was it Cairo you went to? Was it
I think we came to Port Said, not Alexandria, and we were bundled onto a train immediately, and the Egyptians seemed to get absolutely everywhere, you know, in their tarbouches and their clothes, and the poor women in their black and their they don't call them yashmaks, and some of them not, and flies everywhere. That's one thing we did notice that was much better when we went back later. I'm talking about the 50s now. So, no, wait a minute, later than that.
What sort of preparations did you make? Did you have special clothing?
Yes, we had army uniforms with our own badges on. We were dressed in ordinary khaki, like the ATS.
Did you mind that, you know, wearing...
No, I didn't seem to worry at all. I mean, we didn't have any army insignia, and, of course, there were no officers. The FAU had a bit of a problem with that, because sometimes it became very difficult not to have officers. And they did give some sort of honorary, make some doctors and people that were leading groups. Sometimes they were given sort of honorary officer status to make it easier. And I did have a few problems when I went on courses, because they didn't, you know, I wasn't fish nor fowl nor good red herring. And sometimes I was an NCO, you know, and sometimes I was an officer. And I know I went to a hygiene course when I was in the Palestine, and I went with a St. John's Ambulance Unit nurse. I think she was from Canada. Of course, she was automatically an officer, and I was an NCO, and then they sort of upgraded me with, you know, a bit diffidently, but there was more problems with that than my being a pacifist, as far as I can remember. I don't remember anyone ever referring to that.
Yes.
Well, you know, slight problems with eating and things like that, you know.
Yes, you know, with the FAU organisation and this lack of hierarchy, did it mean that it was more democratic? You know, did you feel that there were advantages?
It was very democratic, yes.
And would that
but, of
have
course,
been
there were so few women to men. The women were sort of special anyway, I'm afraid, you know.
Yeah, how and did I you feel remember. About that, you know, being in a minority?
Well, it was very different from being in hospital, where, of course, where you were in a high majority, well, anywhere at home, I suppose. It was, it was a bit of a responsibility in a way. It was quite nice.
Yes, but you made a great deal of fuss.
Oh, a good deal,
you.
Yes.
You coped with that all right?
Not terribly well, no.
Could it cause problems, though?
Oh, it could. It could be difficult, yes. And, you know, you had to be a bit selective. Yes, you tried to be. And, of course, the FAU had so little money. That must have made some problems for, particularly for the chaps, because FAU had something like, well, I suppose it was 30 bob a month, which is, you know, goes absolutely nowhere, especially after you've been in England and you're confronted with all the marvellous things you could get in Cairo. Cream cakes were the thing. And, you know, I can remember that... it was very tempting, and books too, of course, they were available too. I seem to remember a lot of people getting very excited about being able to get books they couldn't get at home.
What sort of pay did you receive? Was it
the same
as
yeah, everyone got the same, yes. Mm. But some people had a bit of their own money as well. I had a little, I remember. Originally, all money had been pulled, and everyone had exactly the same, but it had... changed rather over the years, so that some people did have a bit more and didn't automatically put everything into the pool.
Could I ask you now about the work you did in Egypt?
Well, we all these Mera people started off out at part of an army camp at Mahdi outside Cairo in the desert. And we had classes in map reading, and we had language classes, and... we went out on exercises. They were usually very badly organised. I remember we were given some map readings, and we had to pitch a camp and various things. And I know we were given the wrong map reading, and the poor officer in charge, whom none of us liked, was chasing around all through the night, and eventually fell in the canal. And of course, he had to have injections against bilharzia, and we were all very jubilant about that. That's not only just the FAU; that was everyone. I don't quite know how long that went on. That sort of thing went on. We had a great deal of time on our hands, though.
Well, what would the proportion of FAU have been in this camp compared with the other?
As far as I remember, there were rather more FAU than the other groups. And, of course, there were more men in the FAU groups than there were in the other groups. There weren't many men in the other groups. They were mostly women.
Mm. Were you being given any language training?
Well, I can remember us having... Yugoslav lessons, Serbo-Croat lessons, from a Serbo-Croatian. But he was a Mihailovichite, or a royalist, I think, and he also normally used the Cyrillic alphabet, which, of course, we didn't want to have to learn, because a lot of them don't use it. And He wasn't. I don't think he was a teacher by profession. I think he was just chosen because he was a Yugoslav refugee. I think he had a wooden leg, as far as I remember, an artificial leg. And it's a very, very difficult language to get into because it's got three cases, three genders and five cases, and the plural sometimes different. So it's a very difficult language to get started on and doesn't bear any relationship to French or German or English or Latin, which some people had a little smattering of. So we didn't get very far.
So this Mardi camp, would that have been a training camp only?
Yes, this was only a training sort of holding area. I suppose some people were sent off, but perhaps before we did. When I was sent to this Greek camp, which was the first camp I went to, which was in Palestine, there were already quite a lot of FAU people there, who I don't think had been involved in Mera. I can't quite remember who were Mera and who were not.
Can you remember any of these people?
Thea Kadu was in this camp in Palestine. I'd known him before, that's why I remember him. He tried to teach me of course, I went into Greek then. I can remember him trying to teach me the Greek alphabet. That's about the only person I can remember there. Sydney Carter was in this camp. The name I can't remember. It was near Jaffa. And while I was there, I must have gone to on this hygiene course, which was an army hygiene course. It was mostly army personnel, you know, mostly non-commissioned officers and some nurses, I think.
Did you get to know Sidney Carter quite well?
Not really, no.
Did you have any idea that he was suffering, you know, he was having a few dilemmas about...
Well, I can remember him on... I can remember doing this journey across the Sinai Desert in a lorry with about quite a lot of other people, and him saying then that he felt he'd got to leave the FAU. But I didn't get any... there was no explanation of it at that time.
Well, so what were you doing in this camp in Palestine? Could you tell us
There was a
it?
Hospital, and I was meant to be working in the hospital, and with the lack of interpreters and the difficulty with Greek, where ne means yes and ochi, which sounds like OK, means no, we got off to a very bad start. But most of the people I'd been most friendly with were working in the Yugoslav camps, and it was arranged quite soon, and also I'd been started off on Serbo-Croat rather than Greek. Quite soon, I can't remember quite how soon, I was transferred to one of the Yugoslav camps at Katapa, which was a holding camp out in the desert, out into the desert towards the west of Cairo.
The population of your camp in Palestine, you know, the first
yes.
one, was that near Jaffa, did you say?
Yes.
Yes. Who would the refugees have been?
They were Greeks that had been presumably collected from the islands where there was fighting, or I think, with hindsight, that the way was cleared. When the army was going in, they'd try and get the civilians out of the way. I think that's who they mostly were. There were quite a lot of Greek army doctors that looked after the hospital, I remember. But I don't really know how the refugees got there.
Would they have been men, women, you know?
There weren't very many young men, although there were some. I remember there was a man who sold yoghurt. It was the first time I'd ever met yoghurt. I hadn't any idea what it was. You know, nobody in England knew what yoghurt was. But he was a Greek who used to make it and for them to buy. Patients of mine, and I suppose any Greek personnel there, because there were some. They were Greek nurses as well.
Did the fact that there weren't many young men, did that make for problems?
I don't remember them in the Palestine camp, but certainly when we were with the Yugoslavs, it did make problems, because tents needed repairing and that sort of thing, and there were no people who. The men would have been sailmakers and things like that from the coast, and they would know how to do it, and the old men would have known how to do it, but they couldn't climb up onto the tents and so on. I think the partisan army in Yugoslavia had been very strong, and all the young men had gone off to fight. And a lot of the young mothers would say that their men had gone and they didn't know, they'd just never come back, they didn't know where they were.
How did these two hospitals differ? You know, the one in Jaffa and the one at Katapa, was it?
Mm. Yes. What I remember about the Greek camp was that it was a more or less a run-of-the-mill type of hospital with some appendixes and I don't remember any epidemic there at the time. But when at Katapa there was a measles epidemic, which went right through all the Yugoslavs, and it was very, very severe. In Yugoslavia, they said when there was an epidemic of measles, they used to put the children in a barn and leave them isolated until they were better, and that they fed, you know, that some of the mothers looked after them and fed them, and they mostly got better. But in Egypt, the under fives didn't adapt at all well to the heat and to the food. The over fives were splendid. You know, they were running around barefoot on the boiling hot sand, and they didn't mind eating tinned peaches and so on. But the under fives, particularly the sort of under twos, they wouldn't take the food, and they were giving them sulfonamides because they got pneumonia and bad ears and all the complications that you get with measles. And, of course, they had to drink with that, and they wouldn't drink. And we used to separate them from their parents, which was not good for either of them, really. But, you know, we had the rather strict English idea of hospitals of those days. We tried to transfer them to the refugees, which wasn't very good. They started off having... the camp that they were all in was an army camp, you see, so there were units dispersed over quite large areas because, of course, they would have been... as holding camps, they would have been liable to be bombed. So there were these spread-out units. And they tried to have small hospitals with each camp. And that worked fairly well. But, of course, the death rate was so high and that so many of the children got pneumonia that they tried to bring them into the general hospital. I think, in a way, the children probably did better in these little hospitals than they did when they came into us. I worked in the infectious ward, the isolation ward. We had typhoid and dysentery and chicken pox and mumps, all sorts of things as well as measles. But the measles was the very bad thing.
Was it much of a culture shock for you, you know, adapting to people like the Yugoslavs?
Yes, I felt rather, you know, this awful feeling that the English tend to, that they are a bit superior. Nevertheless, I suppose I was more ready than some to adapt to the ideas that other people were real people as well. But also, of course, I had very little experience of looking after children, nursing children. And the majority, although some of the patients were adults, the vast majority were children.
Do you think that was the prevailing attitude at the time? You know, that people, English people, did tend to look down on...
Well, you know, as I found it in myself, I'm quite sure it applied to other people even more, because I'd been brought up to go holidays abroad and so on before the war, when, you know, it wasn't universal and so on, and a fairly liberal outlook. So as I felt that myself, I'm sure other people felt it as much, if not more.
With the Yugoslavs, did you have any problems regarding the different nationalities within Yugoslavia?
Yes, the three main groups. They had to have three different sorts of camps. They had to have camps for the communists, which ours was, the Titoites. And there had to be camps for the Mihailovicites and camps for the royalists, which is... But anyway, it was no good having them together. And we were communists, and the lovely posters would go up. Serbocrat, as I said, is a terrible, terrible language. But I remember the word for blood is C-R-V, CRF, and this on great signs. Blood seemed to be very important to them. But as I say, there weren't many young people. There were some fairly dominant young females, I seem to remember. They would have political meetings and things, I think.
Did you mention that you felt you might have to go into Yugoslavia at one time?
Yes. No, well, the idea of these merit teams were that they were organised to go in with the army when they first went in to get the civilians organised. Actually, of course, it didn't never happen quite like that. I worked a little bit at another camp near Port Said called El Shat, which was very similar to Katapa. The situation was similar. And then eventually, I can't quite remember how it happened, some of the merit groups were sent over to the heel of Italy to wait there to go in to Yugoslavia. And there were a lot of United Nations people there, a lot of Americans. And we really had very little to do. They used to try and get us to write reports about things. I can't really remember how long we were there. It was horrible because we were in summer villas in the middle of winter. And, you know, there was no heating and marble floors. And the taps were labelled F and C, and we said it was freezing and cold.
Can you remember the nearest town?
Yes, now we were just outside Bari. Yes, we were able to go on trips around and saw some quite interesting things. And also, I can remember the American Air Force sent planes down to collect girls to go up to a dance. I went to one, and it was rather grim, really, because, you know, the chaps were... I know the chap I sort of got partnered off with at that time was flying tomorrow or something, and he didn't stay out very late. And they'd all be counting how many missions they'd flown and when they would, you know, they'd have a break from flying. Very tense they were, really. And on another trip that I didn't go on, they were very, very casual with the accommodation. They had to spend the night. And they said, oh, the loo's over there, of course, strict blackout. And a girl fell down, not from an FAU chap, I think she was Save the Children. She fell down into a precipice and had a fractured skull on the way to the loo, and she died. Terrible. But, of course, they were very glad to have any kind of diversion for the airmen. That was why we were in Bari. But we weren't there very long, and some of us were sent up to Rome. We went in convoy. I think we were all FAU, but I think it was still probably under Mera. I can't quite remember. The FAU had a headquarters in Rome by then, but of course it was an open city, and they were still fighting north of Rome. Of course, we went past Monte Cassino and saw all the devastation.
Was it bad?
Yes, really terrible. Worse than anything I'd seen in England. And you saw the farmland all devastated, you know, trees burnt, that sort of thing. And you also saw lots of crashed trucks and that sort of thing, and big notices saying, keep in low gear, going downhill, and that sort of thing. I had to drive a truck from Naples to Rome. I'd only learned when I was in Cairo, in Egypt, but I'd never been up a hill except to do my hill starts when we had to go to the pyramids to find a hill to do hill starts. And driving a loaded truck up and down hills was an absolute nightmare. But anyway, I survived. I didn't drive much more after that.
How about the plight of the Italian people? You know, did you see...
Yes, they were obviously very poor, and they stole, absolutely right, left and centre. You had to be very, very careful how you packed things. A lot of us lost... I didn't lose anything, but people lost stuff off the back of these trucks when we were travelling about, because if you went slowly through a town, half the stuff out the back would go if it wasn't being watched. They are marvellous survivors, though, I think, the Italians. And of course, there were lots of areas that were out of bounds, so we never didn't see the worst part. And the military, the Americans and the British were very much in evidence everywhere. And
yes, I was wondering about Rome. You know, would that have been a very bustling city?
Again, there was a lot of places you couldn't go. Well, actually, what I noticed as we drove into Rome were the pro stations, hundreds and hundreds of them. I hadn't the faintest idea what they were. They're where the Americans go for prophylactics before they go out to the brothels. And there were masses of them, queues outside all of them. So it was very much a relief, you know, a rest area, Rome. And the opera was open. We went to the opera. And we used to queue up to get gallery seats cheap, you know. And they saw some marvellous operas. I think I saw Tizia Gobbi. I saw Bohème, I saw Tosca, which of course was very dramatic because, you know, we were right by the Angelo thing. And yes, the plight of the Italians, why we went to Rome was to look after Italian refugees themselves. there was a, they'd found a place, I don't know whether it was a munitions factory or merely a holding place for ammunition. But anyway, it had lots and lots of rooms which would accommodate people. I suppose refugees must have moved in there on their own, and then the authorities decided to get it properly organised. And there was an outpatients with an Italian army doctor, and the nuns came and did the cooking, and when they found that the food was missing, we found the nuns were pinching it. That was the first time I'd ever heard anything, you know, degrading about nuns. It really shook me. They were very difficult too, because their order said that they mustn't eat with other people. They must only eat alone. It made problems. Then there was a little Italian architect who wanted to... a lot of the buildings were damaged. Wanted to make a proper hospital. And instead of what we thought he'd do, just stick up a few beaver board walls and make sure the roof was secure, he got out enormous plans for something terribly grandiose, which would cost thousands of pounds. It was quite, foolish. I don't suppose anything was ever done about that. Again, who really organised, responsible for this organisation? I'm not quite clear.
What sort of hospital work did you do in Rome?
In Rome, no. I didn't really do hospital work at all. It was only this outpatients clinic, and a lot of people came with the more minor things and for injections. They liked injections. Now, what were we injecting them for? Probably typhoid and that type of thing, I think. And I think we vaccinated them against smallpox too.
Did you work with Italian doctors?
Yes. There was this Italian doctor who was... he was an army doctor, but he obviously had a nice private practice, and this was a terrible letdown. And he used to say his wife always shopped on the black market because she was so used to having good food, she really couldn't manage on the rations and so on. Things had always worked so beautifully in England, although there was some black market, there was very little, but in Rome, obviously, there was masses of black market. It was a bit hard, too, because a lot of the big hotels were taken over by the army or civilian organisations like UNRWA and so on, and Foreign Office, that sort of thing. And quite reasonable meals were served there, and I had meals there. I don't quite know how I was vouched for. But the Italian, living on rations, of course, their rations were very small. But they were rogues too, because, you know, we had some clothes to distribute, and the word got round. And they obviously went home and stripped their children practically naked, you see, and brought them and said, oh, they need shoes, they need this, that and the other. And if you gave them something, you were pretty sure they'd be sold on the black market, not used. Very difficult to deal with.